Welcome to Speaking in Maine on MPBN. I'm Gordon Fellis. Today our program visits Bates College in Brunswick for a talk by Scott McKay. McKay became a leader of the Green Party of Quebec in 2006 and has 30 years of experience working for environmental causes in Canada. He's now a member of the National Assembly of Quebec for the Parti Québécois. His address is titled Environmentalism and Sovereignty for Quebec: Perspectives from the Parti Québécois. If you enjoy this program and wish to hear it again, or perhaps to share it with a friend, you can do so by visiting our website, mpbn.net. There, look under the On Demand tab at the top of your screen for Audio On Demand, where you'll find this and an archive of past Speaking in Maine programs, a service made possible by member support. Introducing the speaker is Francesco Duina, sociology professor at Bates College.
My name is Francesco Duina. I'm a professor here in the sociology department. It's my great pleasure to have Scott McKay here today. As you probably already know, he's a member of the Parti Québécois in Quebec, obviously, and he is also a member of the National Assembly in Quebec, which means basically he's a legislator and represents a suburb of Montreal, and I'm going to butcher the...
L'Assomption.
And he's here today to speak to us about his party's vision for the future of Quebec, the province of Quebec, and in terms of both, I guess, of sovereignty and independence, but also environmentalism and things having to do with being green, I guess. And it's an interesting blend of themes that go together rather well once you hear what he has to say. He has been involved with environmental things for quite a long time. He was the leader of Quebec's Green Party between 2006 and 2008. And then eventually after that, soon after that, joined the Parti Québécois and has been involved with environmental matters and things in Quebec for a very long time. Decades, I think?
Yeah, almost 30 years now. Already.
Almost 30 years. So he knows a few things about that. This talk is sponsored by the Department of Sociology and also a Mellon Foundation grant that I received. I met Scott last November, maybe, doing a project on separatism. Comparative separatism, North America and Europe. And I spoke to about three or four of your colleagues. And when I spoke to Scott, I thought I should definitely have him come and join us and share his thoughts with us. So without further ado, I will pass the virtual microphone to you. And I'll turn this off, I guess.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, hello, good day, everyone. Thanks for coming today. Full, big crowd. I'm very happy. We like in Quebec to present it maybe a little bit more positively. We like to talk about Quebec sovereignty, so that's what I'll be talking to you about this afternoon. And also, as mentioned, links with environmental issues. And also, what would be the links or the impacts of Quebec sovereignty on our relationship as neighbors? So I'm very we know that Maine is a state, but it's also a state of mind. Yeah, so first, I'd like to know who would have French-Canadian descent here in the room. Can you raise your hand? One, two, three, four, five, six. There's, yeah, so it's, I guess it's relatively representative because there are many, many people from French-Canadian descent in New England, and I'll maybe a little bit address that later. So please allow me for these people to speak a little bit of French and maybe others that have studied my mother tongue. J'aimerais vous dire que vos voisins du Nord, c'est la terre de vos ancêtres, se sont battus contre une forte adversité pour garder vivante cette belle langue en Amérique. Je ne peux que vous encourager à garder vivante la langue française et ainsi honorer la mémoire de vos ancêtres contribué de leur peine et aussi de leur sang au développement de notre terre commune, l'Amérique. As you know, from mid-19th century up to the beginning of World War I, many people came from up north. Maybe I'll, no, since I don't speak so so much in English, I'll stick to my notes a little bit more than I do normally. So many people came from up north hoping to start a new life here in Maine and all through New England. And that was a consequence of a national policy of the federal government of Canada, which at the time was discriminating French. One of the nicknames of the Quebecois people was indeed white niggers. Also, if you dared in Quebec for a long while addressing an English-speaking loyal subject in French, the answer you'd get was speak white. Such expressions lasted up to the late 1960s. So if we go back in history during the war, the years of the American Revolution, emissaries from the future republic came to meet in Quebec what remained of our leaders after the Conquest War to join in the revolution against the British government. And the answer from good old King George was an act, what called the Act of Quebec in 1774, that allowed French Canadians to keep their language, their religion, the code of law, so the Napoleon Code, and he also granted us a civil parliament to what was New France, recalled then Province of Quebec. And he did that in order to prevent them from joining, the Quebecers from joining the American Revolution, because American Revolution had good sympathy within the people up north. It wasn't all that great because he gave us that, but he also threatened to burn down all of the villages in the St. Lawrence Valley, villages that hadn't already been burnt to the ground during the French and Indian War. And so to the disarmed people of Quebec, war was enough, the suffering was plenty, and therefore a position of neutrality was kept. Personally, I'm proud of my Irish and Scottish roots, but this didn't stop me from embracing the cause of Quebec sovereignty wholeheartedly. And for me, in the face of injustice, race is not an issue. There's an old saying that only the poor share, the rich only giving the crumbs, the leftovers, but again, if you look at some of our best accomplishments, they usually all come through sharing. In Quebec, of course, you probably know that healthcare is free. Education is by far the cheapest in North America, yet of every high standards. For just a few dollars a day, families have full access to quality daycare for their children, which makes it possible for mothers to pursue their own career while still having the freedom of choice to stay home full-time if they wish so. Our workers have some of the best laws to protect them, and we have by far the highest percentage of them being part of a union, the largest percentage both in Canada or the U.S. Our entrepreneurs are actually amongst the least taxed in both countries. Former Premier Parizeau, that was from our party, he was an economist, and he once said, you know, if a business in Quebec pays income tax, they should change their accountant. So the cost of energy also is the cheapest for both citizens and businesses, again, all over North America. And as you can believe, all of this comes at a cost. And it's true that our public debt is also ranking in the top spots. But considering our tremendous assets, it's probably in the average of advanced countries. This said, there's not only a cost to all this, but also many rewards. As a consequence, we have more youth educated and less in jail. Women enjoy a freedom that not too many places in the world can offer. And I'd like to point out that Quebec was the first state in the world to include in our civil charter of rights the interdiction of discrimination against gay and lesbians. That was in 1977. Of course, same-sex marriage is legal, and this is, we don't feel it as a threat to heterosexual families like mine, because in Quebec, hatred is not considered a family value. Just a few days ago, an old friend of mine was mentioning that despite our shortcomings, well, when we look at ourselves, we're never or rarely satisfied, but when we compare, well, we feel much better. Now, in terms of environment and respect of international treaties such as the Kyoto Protocol, it's no wonder then that it's in Quebec that you'll find the highest level of support on the continent, and we're amongst the most rigorous in terms of respect of its conditions. So in my party, we're the minority party, the Parti Québécois, right now. We're hoping to come back to power as soon as possible. But so I'm the spokesperson for the opposition party on the environment. And it's never enough for me and never enough for us. But if we compare, we got pretty good marks in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Polls also show that Quebecers are by far more the most preoccupied of all Canadians regarding depletion of the environment. Yet we can't achieve everything that we'd like, and not addressing all that needs to be done in order to achieve more significant and long-lasting results, and that would be really being able to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions to the point where we could prevent the worst impacts of climate change. But in fact, in Quebec, we're punished for being good students in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, a lot through federal regulations that promote fossil energy and prevent development of green technologies. You see, in Quebec, we don't produce oil or yet gas, because we found a little bit recently, but we do believe in the common sense of green technology development. Yet, if you look at the last Canadian federal budget, that was just a few weeks ago, more credits are given to the oil industry, which already benefits of a great deal of fiscal advantages, besides its billions of profit, and not a penny, not a single cent is given to support eco-responsible businesses, which are growing strong in Quebec. I feel quite free in saying that, because I was at the international conference in Copenhagen last December within the Canadian delegation, and I was able to witness firsthand what you might have seen or heard in the media. Canada was shamed by the international community for being such a strong enemy to the environment, and not only by the scientific community, but by many politicians as well, and I may add, no matter if they were from the left or the right. I did explain to many that Quebec was also very critical of the Canadian harmful policies against environment, and that we did not endorse any of them, but what could we do? We're only 1 in 10 in that political system, and of course, in international forums like that, the Copenhagen conference, Canada speaks with one person speaks for Canada. It's the with one voice, and just as if Quebec was non-existing. There is one thing, though, that all federal ministers have in common. They never put forward the best interests of Quebec because generally these conflict with the interest of such and such other province. And there are many reasons to wish the sovereignty of Quebec, and nationalism is really only one of them. And by the way, I know there are probably a few Canadian students here. You've probably heard that was about 2 years ago. So in our history, only 2 years that the federal parliament accepted to recognize the Quebec people as a nation. And so the parliament recognized in the past for a long time the Welsh or the Scottish nations, no problem with that. When Ukraine was part of USSR, Canada recognized the Ukrainian nation, but when it came to Quebec, complete denial. And even 2 years ago, when that kind of recognition passed of Quebec nation, then it had to be formulated in a way that suggests that Quebec nation could only have an existence within Canada, as if we'd be out, we'd just be nobodies. You know that Scotland is a nation regardless it's part of Britain or not. The same is true for Quebec. A nation is first a number of people who share distinct culture, common history and values attached to a homeland, rather than having a country or not. That would be a little bit simplistic. And what you call here the French and Indian War is known in Europe. Maybe Professor Duina, that's initially from Italy, could confirm that war is called the 7 Years' War. But in Quebec, it's called the Conquest War. For about 100 years after that war, where obviously the French lost, we had the low status of British colony. When the British loyalists came to us from the South after the American Revolution, the ones that wanted to stay loyal to Britain, when they came to Quebec, they actually, and Canada in general, they were not any better with their new neighbors than they were with their old neighbors. So in the 19th century, quite a bit of turmoil appeared. There were two popular uprisings against the British occupant that led to the creation of what was supposed to be the Confederation of Canada. So the written act creating this country was, in our view, was never respected, as the central government, controlled by the very loyalist British majority, intervened and took over nearly all the powers that were initially recognized to the province in the agreement. Even the spirit of the letter, which talked about Quebecois people as a co-founder of the country, was thrown to the ground and buried deep. The first national policy of Canada, actually, was aimed at preventing the country to become more French. If nowadays such tactics would not be told, at the time it wasn't even kept secret. It was done very openly, and indeed the French settlers living in the west of Canada were dispossessed of their land by federal decree. Following that, another popular uprising was crushed, and to make sure no more settlers, because the uprising was based because some of their rights were taken and their land was taken off of them. But so that was not the problem for the Canadian government. What was the problem was the fact that French people were there. So to make sure that no more settlers would come from Quebec and increase that negative feeling, well, laws were passed to forbid the use of French in schools outside of Quebec, as well as in most public places, and for sure all public offices. You couldn't speak French at the post office or any, for any service outside of Quebec. So technically, a Québécois could still go out west, but he had to pay the equivalent of about two years of his wages to own a piece of land. The federal government opened the doors wide open to non-French immigrants from Europe. They could have the same piece of land for free with subsidy. Of course, we had to pay for these subsidies. And this and other economic measures of the federal policy greatly impoverished, make the Quebecois people poor, which at least in great part explains why 30 years after the creation of Canada, about one quarter of the population of Quebec had immigrated to the U.S., mainly here in the neighboring states of New England. Now, I won't go on with history. What's done is done. But I wanted to give you an overview of the depth of that never-ending conflict between Québécois and, you know, what has grown from that what happened between the Quebec people and the loyalists, British loyalists that were English Canadian. Fortunately, a few things improved over time, and in the 60s, for instance, pretty much, I thought all laws banning French were lifted, but I've been told maybe it's not exactly the case. So let's say most laws banning French were lifted in the 60s, and one can also say that from the 20th century on, Quebec people developed kind of an attitude of resignation regarding Canada. As long as they left us alone in our own backyard, they could have their way. And but we have to see the fact that the federal state is still impeding in Quebec's policies. There's many times we need with our laws. Even if just a few months ago, a law adopted with unanimously in the Quebec National Assembly was defeated in Canada's Supreme Court. And we have a saying in Quebec that the Supreme Court is like the La Tour de Pise, the Pise Tower. It always leans on the same side. So what's more preoccupying, and what is the nature of our party's policies is that those federal Canadian policies prevent us from fully expressing ourselves and developing our own potential according to our own values. And I gave you earlier the example of the Copenhagen conference, where it was exposed how deep our differences are regarding the environment and global warming or climate change issues. Not only we don't get any support to develop our green technologies, but we're also more advanced than the rest of Canada on that issue, yet we've got to pay a high price for the polluting sources of energy subsidized by the government of Canada. You see, European countries have adopted some action where greenhouse gas emissions are mandatory, and they've already said, and the l'Organisation Mondiale du Commerce, the trade, the World Trade Agency, accepted last year that for greenhouse gas emissions, you could have special taxes to prevent products from countries that don't take action against greenhouse gas emissions. Well, countries that do take action may impose a tax to the entry of these products. So, you know, in Canada, the province that makes the most export to Europe is Quebec by far. I think Quebec has 25% of the exports to Europe, and Alberta, the oil-producing province, only 3%. So it may be a major impact against our businesses, the products manufactured by our businesses, even though we've been a good student and we've delivered. But our federal government being very, very open to the oil and gas industry has not taken action, and as a matter of fact, has not respected the fact that the previous administration in Canada had signed the Kyoto Protocol. So no help for renewable energy means more profits in the pockets of the oil industry, and to us, this nonsense must stop. The federal government claims that Quebec receives the largest share of equalization payment. That's a system that's supposed to redistribute some of the money of the richest provinces to the poorest. Therefore, what they say is, you can do what you want with that money, but just stop complaining. And I can tell you that this fraudulent view is applauded by both hands in Canada, except that they forget to state a few facts, major ones, when they use that oversimplistic approach to the problem. First, the federal system of taxation creates a problem of fiscal unbalance. Canada collects more money, yes, has less expenses than Quebec as a jurisdiction. And if we were to repatriate our money from Ottawa, we'd have a huge advantage of choosing how we'd spend it, how we would spend that money. For example, our money would not be used to support the fat cows of the oil industry in Alberta, nor the car industry based in Ontario mainly. We don't have any of that manufacturing base in Quebec. In the meantime, our own industries struggle. If you look at the value of the Canadian dollar right now, it's going up when the oil the value of the price of the oil barrel goes up. That's a phenomenon that economists call the Dutch disease. In Holland, when they discovered oil became such important part of the economy that basically the currency does not follow the general economic activity in the country, but follows what happens with the international price of oil. So basically the country loses all its control over the value of its currency. And the fact that the high, when you've got high value of the American dollar, that's good if you're exporting oil, but that's not very good if you're trying to sell manufactured goods. Then, and we've, with some recent studies, tend to demonstrate that we've lost, in the last 5 years alone, probably over 55,000 manufacturing jobs just in Quebec. So our industry does struggle, and of course, if taxes are imposed in Europe, well, then we'll have even more problems. So we believe that when we'll control our own purse, maybe there'll be a little bit less money in it, but we'll stop paying for things we don't need, like the duplication of federal services and their intrusion in our own, and also for things we don't want, such as subsidies to the oil industry. The fiscal unbalance being dealt with will even get some benefits, but most of all, will be the ones deciding how the money is spent, and that is sovereignty, my friends. In Canada, there's an expression to talk about French and English relationship. It's called the two solitudes. But what's important is to recognize that that country was not cemented through love nor respect, not even through a will to build something together. Of course, in our view, it just happened to exist so that the British could keep full control over the entire territory. If you consider how upset most people are with Quebec and our demands, one wonders why they wouldn't be happy to see us leave, thus enabling them to run their country just the way they like. But the reason is simple. They would lose a great deal if Quebec was to become a sovereign country. And that's probably why the rest of Canada spent billions of dollars in contravention with our democratic laws when Quebec ran a referendum on sovereignty in 1995. We had two, the last one, 1995. A clear majority of French Canadians, nearly 60%, wished to have a free country. Unfortunately, the 20% who isn't French voted against in overwhelming numbers. But if you add to this that the money that was thrown in the election and also fear thrown into the hearts and minds of our fellow citizens, that equaled a referendum that was lost by a margin of less than 1%. So it was really close. A few days before the vote was held, polls were showing the yes option was going to win. And the federal government then organized what was called a love-in, giving tens of thousands of plane tickets for Canadians to come to Quebec to say, "We love you." But it was tough love. As we saw right after the vote, the federal parliament voted even more laws to reduce Quebec's rights and powers, again in full contradiction with the constitution of that country, which, by the way, the constitution was never signed when it was repatriated from Britain by Pierre Elliott Trudeau. That was never signed by any prime minister in Quebec, would he be a sovereignist or a federalist. And as for now, the debate is like a bit on a standby. People, we believe, do want a break, but the issue did not go away, and it will never disappear. It won't disappear anyway. It will disappear if the Quebec nation disappears with what we think is that's what will happen eventually if we don't repatriate all our powers. Next time it comes to the surface, then we know we're going to win. The last time was less than 1%. The next time will be the right time. The pride and dignity of Quebecers is at stake. And what's more, the fear-mongering of the federal government is working less and less because young people are more educated and they don't fall into those traps as easily in the past. Now, what would that mean in terms of relationship with the U.S. and more specifically with our neighboring states such as Maine? Well, first, we'd still do business and that nothing would change. You'd still buy our electricity. Manufactured good would still circulate freely as it's in the case presently. Quebec is one of the, if not the most open economy, for sure, in North America. And you know, the main argument of the federal government in Canada to keep people from voting yes was that if we become a sovereign state, all ties would be cut with everyone. We'd isolate ourselves, including on the economy. And this kind of argument may have worked in the past, but now people realize that if anyone, like the rest of Canada, was to do that, they would be losing at least as much and very likely more than what we would. And that kind of threat, I must say, never was expressed neither from the U.S. government nor from any of the states with which we do our business. And that's a reason why we in the Parti Québécois try to be as much as possible active internationally to build ties, and that's why I cherish so much Leila and Nancy being here. We need to keep those ties, and we nourish them, and because we know that once we're a sovereign country, we will continue to bring our voice in the international forum. So what Quebec exports the most to the world is not its huge amount of natural resources, nor its manufactured goods, it's its culture. And I'm not talking only about Céline Dion and Cirque du Soleil. In all spheres of cultural life around the world, we're duly present, even when it's not well known. So this is our first gift to our fellow humans, and with our independence will come a second one, a state that shows that economy does not have to be an enemy to the environment nor to social justice. Also, in all the fights that divide our humanity over religions and belief, our country would be a truly non-religious state. Citizens, of course, will keep their liberty of faith, but in the living together, the state will be neutral. This would be another positive signal sent that we, little people walking through the harshness of life, will not separate ourselves on the grounds of beliefs that can't be proven, but will unite to face the challenges at hand. And presently, the most urgent is the depletion of our environment and climate change, both real threats to us all. So thank you very much for being here and listening. Vive le Maine et vive le Québec.
Well, thank you very much. Very powerful and measured at the same time. So thank you. We have the privilege of being able to pose questions and hear answers to the things that Scott has discussed. So I'm going to open the floor up for questions. And if you could be kind enough to raise your hand, I'll bring the microphone to you.
Hi. I'm from Ontario, and I think that I have been taught sort of very opposite of the things that you said. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of Canada agrees with that. And so, like, at least in my curriculum, I've always been taught about, like, in French class, we learn all about Quebec and its history and how it defines Canada as a nation. So I was just wondering what you think about that and how Canadians think of Quebec and how significant it is to our country and how we look at our culture.
Well, I think there's been in the recent past, probably since the Trudeau era, there's been a lot of efforts invested by our federal government in Canada to erase the traces of history and the past, and to show, you know, something we've got a hard time with in Quebec is the multicultural policies that where, you know, Canada is depicted as a patchwork of all sorts of different community. And, you know, again, we I told you about the gay and lesbians' rights in our civil rights charter. It's very generous in all for all minorities, but we believe that this nation, the people, must share common values, must share a same a common language. That's how we can have the same social code, and that that patchwork policy is maybe very, you know, may have some advantages or at least be pretty romantic idea, but what it means is the disparition or that of the Quebec nation fairly rapidly, because obviously what will happen is that being in a melting pot of English speaking people, it probably won't be very long before we disappear. And if you look what I've mentioned, go back to Louis Riel. Riel was a métis in Manitoba, and he was hanged because of one of the uprising. And that uprising came because the federal government was taking their lands off of them. You know, initially they had the French system of having the land made going from the river and a strip up to the main road. When the British came, their view of lands was square, and so of course when you cut a square on a long strip of land, well, then it's not very long. So you cut it a lot. So in order to stop, once Riel was hanged, it wasn't really it helped a bit. But when Manitoba was created, to try to settle the problem between the French and the English in Manitoba, and it worked quite well, because the English were a majority, and as I mentioned, and that again is only facts, they voted laws to ban French from schools, and eventually there was just a Laurier was a French Canadian prime minister. He found a compromise the French kids could talk French at school, but only after class. That's the type of compromise that the French people have had to accept. And you see, you go to Manitoba now, and it's only French is only folkloric. So that eventually we know is what will happen in Quebec. So it's a different way of looking at the history of Canada. It's all based on facts, and I was happy to hear that there would be Canadian students here, because I'm sure you're probably pretty astonished of hearing that side of the story, and just to finish, I can tell you that the federal government is working very hard also in Quebec so that we don't see that. That lecture of historic facts, and it's something that we're very worried of is the history being taught in Quebec in our schools right now is very poor and just tries to wash away all those the controversial events in our past.
Thank you.
But I must say, we respect Canadians, and you know, Quebec governments have never been aggressive. We do everything in, you know, respecting the laws and democracy, and it is. I think we can be happy, everyone in Canada, and even in North America, to see that such potentially very harsh and controversial debate can be dealt with in a democratic way.
So I understand that the Quebecois people have been shaped by a history of, I guess, persecution and alienation almost from the rest of Canada. But what I thought that maybe wasn't touched upon so much was the state of the issue in the present, because I know that the Canadian government federally, and I don't know if it's just incentive to try and stop Quebec from seceding, but, like, I mean, more recently, the establishment of French as the official second language, mandatory, being taught in schools, funded Catholic schools by the government. What are your thoughts on those policies and institutions?
Well, it's true. In the past, what was really the cement between the Quebec people was the religion, and it was good because it did, you know, prevent Quebec people from turning very widely English speaking, but and losing the culture. But it also kept people in kind of a impoverished state. So it's not only, the federal policies, but it was also, you know, it was against our religion to make money for a long time. So if you were poor, you'd go directly to paradise. So that, you know, it helped. In the recent years, the federal policy of bilingualism, I think it's a view of the spirit. It is. It's not been working, and I don't know if you've listened to the Vancouver Olympics, the opening ceremony. Did you hear a lot of French there? So that answers your question pretty much. I think it's, you know, even though some politicians have been, like Pierre Trudeau and Jean Chrétien, there were politicians from Quebec, and they worked very hard to try to find a good settlement and say, you know, that the past is the past, and let's move forward. But the fact of the matter is you've got two different nations. You got two different set of culture, of values. You can try as much as you wish to cement that together, but obviously, it's not been working very well, and what we see that is working well is the ties, and that was a lot of questions Professor Duina had when we met, is how come are you as a separatist movement so much, you seem to be so much in favor of free trade? Well, we are very much in favor of free trade, and we were the Quebec government, when the Parti Québécois was in power, was pushed a lot for Canada to sign that agreement, because we believe that our economy is very open, and that our ties, that's where we can share something common, is on the economy. We can all be more wealthy if we can, you know, do good business together, but on the language, on the culture, well, we need to work very strongly to defend that, because we're in a huge melting pot, and we've got to be very aggressive, and we cannot start bilingualism in Quebec at the state level. Of course, every individual is encouraged to speak English in addition to French. You know, mine is, I got a big accent, but it ain't all that bad, I guess. And I need to practice more, though. And at the government level, when our policies, our money, the public services, we think need to be French. If you're to live in Quebec, you need to melt into that culture, And that's why one of things, you know, we've got a law that where we, in Quebec, public money cannot be used for English, not for English-speaking schools, but for immigrants have to speak, to learn French in school. So no public school can be subsidized to learn English to immigrants. When you come, you choose to come to Quebec, you need to learn French. But that's the law that's been challenged recently by the Canadian Supreme Court, was a law where we the opening, the breach is that if you go to a private school, so that's not subsidized with public money, then an immigrant can come to Quebec and learn English in school if he pays his own tuition. Well, that gives like a two-speed policy where people that do have the money have the ability to blend into the English community, and that's not, it's probably not fair for the immigrants, but surely not fair for the majority that wants to, that's struggling to stay alive in this huge English melting pot. I'm not known for my short answers, I'm sorry.
Can you take couple more questions? Are you
sure,
able to just two or three, and then we'll wrap it up?
One I came a long way, so I'm.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he came specifically for this. He has nothing else on his agenda, so we appreciate that. So two or three more questions, something like that. This comes from a Catalan. This comes from a Catalan, a person from Catalonia.
Ah.
So we have to see what he has to say.
Catalunya, Quebec, Unidos.
Thank you for such an interesting talk. Actually, you know, related to being from Catalonia, I had a when trying to reflect what you were saying, especially when you were talking about the ability of discretionary spending that you don't have. As you may know, we have both Catalonia and a little bit more in the Basque country in Spain. The constitution, the Spanish constitution, allows is pretty flexible in the way that give powers, fiscal powers, for those provinces. My question would be, is the Canadian constitution open for that? Do you see in a medium term kind of a gaining that fiscal independence?
The Canadian constitution would allow it, but it does not give the provinces the power to impose it. So the federal, you know, and it's funny because we were discussing that yesterday in Parliament. We brought in a motion to say that we should have only one income tax declaration, because there's two in Quebec. In the rest of Canada, it's one, and it's managed by the federal government. But in Quebec, so you've got the federal income tax declaration and the Quebec one. So what we were proposing, that there should be one, but one managed by Quebec, obviously. And the example that was given in the speeches that we gave, I wasn't speaking, but I listened closely. They were giving, one of the examples given was the Basque country, and you can tell me if that's right. In the Basque country, the Madrid government delivers a certain number of services. So they deliver those services over the year. At the end of the year, they send you an invoice, and then, of course, you check if what's in the invoice is right, and then you send a check to Madrid. That is right. That's correct. So that's what we would appreciate in Quebec, but that goes against the will of the central government, because that would mean that we would. You know, we would have the power, maybe not, of paying that invoice, because then they would be in all the areas where they are not giving us the money to spend it as we want, but they're giving it directly to our citizens. Well, then that we would not reimburse that money. We'd say, okay, you got too much, we'll take it. So they would never do that. But the way it's being done, and it's the same for Catalonia, for Catalan. But that's what you're right. wanting to right. get. There's many similarities with Quebec, and that of course would prevent the federal government from also always overflowing on our powers and sectors of competence.
So it's in the constitution. The political will is not there, and that's what's preventing.
The constitution doesn't say it could not be done. Okay. It was the world changed quite a bit since the initial paper was signed. There were a few more of it.
One.
Yep. In the back.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, okay, let's go one and two. Well, let's do one and two. I think I saw you first here.
Je vous remercie d'être venu.
Bienvenue.
I'm interested in the allophone vote, the allophone immigrants. There's been 3 decades now of their going to the francophone schools. What do the polls show about their allegiance?
That's also very much in the news right now, because you know what, Quebec has a special agreement with Ottawa, where we have a bit of saying on the immigration coming to Quebec. So we've increased the level of the numbers of people that are invited each year. I think it's 55,000 now every year, and then they need to go to French schools. So since we're involved in the selection of the immigrants, we favor people that have already master French or have a certain knowledge of French, at least. So that helps. But the strength of English is so strong. Like what we call Bill 101, which is the French Bill of Rights of French, not Bill of Rights, but Bill of French language, addresses education in the primary and secondary level. But when you get to the college level and university, then it's still free choice. And the numbers show that even though they immigrants were raised in French, once they get to college, about half of them go to English colleges or English-speaking universities. You know, we've got great English-speaking universities in Montreal, McGill, and Concordia. So it's a great matter of concern, especially that that's the age where you meet your spouse, and you get more involved in your first jobs and et cetera. So what we're seeing is that about half of the immigrants are still blending to the English speaking community or culture. So that means. And especially on the island of Montreal, what happened, we still have a lot of people living in the inner city, but a lot of French-speaking people are going in the suburbs. And so that gives a higher concentration of immigrants and also English-speaking people on the island of Montreal. So right now, we just passed last year that level where it's half and half. So the French, in a very, very short period, will become a minority on the island of Montreal. And that's a very great concern for us. So we don't see. So that's why, if we're sure that if we don't do something about it, it can be French can be lost quite rapidly. And also there's always the economic attraction of working in English. So we've got to make sure that our businesses they keep doing business in French in Quebec, even though we do a lot of exports. We need to, so you see, it's kind of a balance that's not easy. So it does take sometimes some measures that, if you look at to it from outside, you kind of worry about civil rights. But civil rights are in very, very good shape in Quebec. It's just that there's also a nation that's struggling to survive.
I'm first generation American born. My parents were born in Canada, in Quebec. And I have a cousin that I talk to periodically there. And he belongs to the Parti Quebec, Parti Libéral.
Yeah.
And he tells me that he thinks that if Quebec were to separate, that the economy... would be tough to sustain itself there. Also, he tells me that there is division amongst the people of Quebec, even within families. And he said that there might even be a possibility of a civil war if that were to happen. Now, is he correct? Is he wrong?
I'm
open to your thoughts.
Well, on the economy, it is, there may be a debate there. I admit, I personally believe strongly that, and that's why, we've worked so much for Quebec to be free trade and an open economy, so that if ever we become a sovereign country, well, those economic ties, very diversified. We do much more business with the U.S. than we do with the rest of Canada. And we export to Europe and around the world. So, and as I mentioned earlier, never the U.S., and especially not our neighboring states, never said, if you want to secede from Canada, we'll cut... The ties and we'll put barriers. What would be your interest in the U.S. to do such thing? You have no interest at all. On the other issue, you see in 1995, the referendum was the yes to sovereignty lost by less than 1%, about half of 1%. So it was very, very tight and close. So, what if we would have won? It's the same that the people voting no won the last time. We didn't. There weren't any uprising. There weren't any. Of course, we weren't happy about it. But you've never seen any riots and such things in the streets of Montreal. So I think that's really an argument that is still used by people that don't want to see Quebec come to its sovereignty. It's not based on reality and facts. And the best demonstration of that is, even though we do, and it's true, and when you've got a referendum, we had two, one in 1980 and one in 1995. And I remember in 1980, I was 19 years old, and my dad, which is Irish, and he was English-speaking, he was against sovereignty, but at this... So we did add some harsh arguments, but it didn't bring to any. I didn't leave home before I was 24, I guess, and he didn't kick me out at least. But at the 1995 referendum, then he voted yes. So you know, it's the strength of arguments and discussing and you know, not giving too much value to fear, and just try to look at it as much as possible, cold-minded. And I think there, you know, both things can happen. We can stay in Canada or become sovereign. The economy will still be good or go up and down, and we won't be fighting more than we are right now.
One more question here. I guess we can make it our final question. It comes from a person from Turkey, no less.
Hi. And I'm also doing a study, independent study with Professor Duina on nationalism and modernity, actually. And my question is going to be a follow-up question to the last one. You talked about economic problems that Quebec is facing, or economic disagreements between Quebec and the federal government, political problems in terms of sharing who is going to have more power, the regional government or Quebec, and also the historical separation. But at the same time, the notion that I got from your talk was that there is a certain Quebec identity that you want to preserve, and that's the biggest reason for you to want a sovereign Quebec. Considering that, if Quebec becomes a separate nation, I mean, do you think you will come up with a definition of a, you know, good Quebec's individual, a person who is going to live in Quebec, like, because you want to preserve a certain identity, because you have concerns about assimilation, does it mean that once Quebec becomes a sovereign country, there is going to be a certain definition of a proper Quebec person who speaks French, who does certain things? Because if you want to preserve a certain culture, and considering that you are surrounded by, you know, English-speaking countries, plus you have already a lot of immigrants who have a tendency to speak English, don't you think that it can be a problem if you have a certain definition or a certain concern about maintaining a particular culture in Quebec?
Yeah. I believe you're right. There's a danger. There's a threat there that... that's why I mentioned, you know, nationalism is not the only reason behind sovereignty of Quebec, but nationalism can be very good, but it can also be very bad. I think we believe where the line is that divides that positive and negative aspect is, and that's very strong in our party since the beginning, because we strongly believe in democratic values, is that it's not the individual that we're addressing to. It's what needs to be French is our institutions. It's our, you know, all the institutions in our government, the services, of course, even though we go... all, you know, out of our way many times, and probably a little bit too much currently, to adapt to the English people that, you know, we're very sorry they don't speak French. And so, but, you know, we're sorry, but we speak, you know, we have to speak English. So if you come to Quebec, you have to speak French. But it's not, you know, being a good citizen or not a good citizen. It's just that you can speak whatever your language wherever you want. But when you will come to the public schools, well, you will have to speak French and to learn French, and that's it. But we, you know, there's like three principles. We've proposed a piece of legislature. That's one of the ones the opposition bring in that will just stay there and die once the session is resumed, but finishes. But we bring three basic values: a law to protect the to or to remember the three basic values of Quebec Nation, and that is la laïcité, separation between state and religion. Church and state separation, the French language. Le troisième, I got to know that, but I'm kind of nervous.
We have a professor of French here.
Yeah, oh, excuse me. The other one is equality between men and women. Very important one. And actually, we believe that in the Charter of Rights, equality between men and women should have a predominance over all other principles, because we, even though the Charter of Rights respects the choice of religion, religion